Welcome to Enclave on Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Enclave on Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Guru P. Sampavde, MD, Director of Bladder Cancer and a physician at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, to discuss some of the main highlights from the 2021 Genitourinary Cancer Symposium in urothelial carcinoma, including key findings from the Phase 3 CheckMate 274 trial, the EV-201 and EV-301 trials, and the Retain Bladder trial, among others. According to Sampavde, the CheckMate 274 trial captured significant attention during the 2021 Genitourinary Cancer Symposium. However, he explained that immunotherapy is not the only promising approach under study in urothelial carcinoma, citing an abundance of research regarding antibody-drug conjugates and novel agents as reasons for excitement. In our exclusive interview, Sampavde discussed promising research in urothelial carcinoma and anticipated research directions with immunotherapy, chemotherapy, and antibody-drug conjugates. Let's start off with the CheckMate 274 trial. Could you highlight the clinical significance of these data in patients with muscle-invasive urothelial carcinoma?
So I want to thank Enclave for this opportunity to present the key highlights of the GU ASCO symposium that was held virtually. So one of the key highlights, I think the major highlight really of this meeting was the CheckMate 274 trial, which was a phase 3 trial that examined adjuvant nivolumab versus placebo in high-risk muscle-invasive urothelial carcinoma. So these are patients who were high-risk because they had had neoadjuvant cisplatin-based chemotherapy and had muscle-invasive disease or higher stage at radical cystectomy or nephroureterectomy, because this study allowed both bladder and upper tract high-risk urothelial carcinoma. So this study was a fairly large study, 709 patients. And the co-primary endpoints were disease-free survival in the overall population, as well as in the PD-L1 high tumor population. So the bottom line is that the study met its co-primary endpoints. The median disease-free survival in the overall population was prolonged significantly from a median of 10.9 months for the placebo arm to 21.0 months in the nivolumab arm. The hazard ratio was 0.70. The p-value was highly significant, 0.0006. And when they looked at the PD-L1 high population, again, the primary endpoint of disease-free survival was met. The median disease-free survival was not reached in the nivolumab group and was 10.8 months in the placebo group. The hazard ratio was more robust in the PD-L1 high population at 0.53. Again, the p-value was highly significant at 0.0004. Now, in this presentation, survival has not been presented. However, the co-primary endpoints have been met. So the investigators argued that this study is practice-changing. We have to remember that the backdrop is that the IMvigor010 trial, which looked at adjuvant atezolizumab, did not show an improvement in disease-free survival. And this was at ASCO last year in 2020. Interestingly, in a retrospective analysis of the IMvigor010 trial, patients who had circulating tumor DNA positive post-operatively, which suggests that minimal residual disease was positive, in this group of patients, there was a benefit from adjuvant atezolizumab. Again, this is a retrospective analysis of the IMvigor010. Again, to recall that there is a third study going on called the Ambassador trial that's looking at adjuvant pembrolizumab. And this is comparing pembrolizumab versus observation. So there is not a placebo control group. And the co-primary endpoints are overall survival and disease-free survival in the overall population. Benefit in the PD-L1 high population is a secondary endpoint in that study. So I believe that this study is practice-changing, at least for the PD-L1 high group. And while we await survival overall in both these groups, the overall and the PD-L1 high group, and we await the Ambassador trial. And I also believe that disease-free survival benefit in an adjuvant checkpoint inhibitor setting is actually more likely to translate to improved survival than in the perioperative chemotherapy context.
What was significant about the findings from the EV-301 and EV-201 trials?
This is the confirmatory phase 3 trial that examined enfortumab vedotin, an antibody drug conjugate targeting Nectin-4 in patients in the post-platinum and post-PD-1-L1 inhibitor setting of metastatic urothelial carcinoma. So to recall, enfortumab vedotin is already FDA approved in this setting based on a non-randomized phase 2 trial. So this is a phase 3 confirmatory trial that should hopefully lead to full approval. So in this trial, enfortumab vedotin improved overall survival significantly. The median survival improved from 9 months to 12.9 months, hazard ratio 0.70. Progression-free survival also was extended from 3.7 months to 5.6 months, hazard ratio was 0.61. And the overall response rate also improved from 17.9% for chemotherapy to 40.6% for enfortumab vedotin. The third study I wanted to highlight was the EV-201 trial. The EV-201 trial is a non-randomized phase 2 trial. And one of the cohorts was the post-platinum and PD-1 third-line cohort, which led to the approval of enfortumab in the third-line setting. But the cohort presented at the GU ASCO Symposium was focused on the second-line cohort. This was post-PD-1 L1 inhibitor patients in the second-line setting getting enfortumab. And these patients were also cisplatin ineligible and had not received prior platinum-based chemotherapy. So in this group, this again was a non-randomized phase 2 cohort of 91 patients, and the response rate was consistent with what has been seen with enfortumab in the third-line setting. The objective response rate was 52%, and very impressively, the complete response rate was 20%. The median duration of response was 10.9 months. And the median overall survival exceeded a year at 14.7 months. And the toxicities were consistent with what has been seen before, which is peripheral neuropathy, rash, and hyperglycemia among the most common. And this drug was looked at in this trial in the second line space, of course. And as we know, the community standard in the second line post-PD-1 inhibitor space is actually gemcitabine carboplatin in the cisplatin ineligible patients. So one can say that maybe enfortumab vedotin provides also a strong option in this space. Again, I remind you that enfortumab is still not quite FDA approved in this second line post-PD-1 inhibitor space. So we await any guidelines in that direction.
Now, moving to the perioperative space, could you speak to the clinical significance of the findings from the RETAIN bladder trial?
Again, this is switching directions, going from the metastatic disease setting to the perioperative setting. So the standard of care in patients with muscle-invasive bladder cancer has been neoadjuvant cisplatin-based combination chemotherapy, followed by radical cystectomy in all of these patients, regardless of the quality of response, because there is always some discord between clinical response and pathologic response. So the standard has been radical cystectomy for everyone. Now, the RETAIN bladder trial looked at whether we could use tumor genomic information and the clinical quality of response information to stratify patients, or at least offer patients a bladder preserving approach of active surveillance. So, i.e., if patients had a DNA damage repair mutation in the tumor that we know associates with pathologic complete remission in retrospective studies, and if patients also had a clinical complete response, suppose neoadjuvant chemo had no disease and cystoscopy and radiologic information, then these patients were offered active surveillance. So suffice it to say that this was, again, a small study, modest size, 71 patients. So the patients who got on the active surveillance group had fairly impressive outcomes. There was a recurrence rate of 65% in this group. However, about half of these recurrence were non-muscle invasive, the other half were invasive. And a couple of patients had metastatic disease, which was in fact fatal. So I think that there needs to be further study of this approach, but I think it's a very exciting and promising approach, which deserves further study. In fact, the Fox Chase group is looking at the combination of dose-dense MVAC with a checkpoint inhibitor in this neoadjuvant space to see if using genomic information and its combination immuno-chemo-immunotherapy approach, whether that could lead to even better outcomes with this strategy.
During the 2021 Genitourinary Cancer Symposium, the results of a phase 2-3 study evaluating N-803 in patients with BCG-unresponsive non-metastatic bladder cancer were also presented. So what really stood out to you from these results?
The last study I wanted to highlight was also a non-randomized study of non-muscle invasive bladder cancer, so an even earlier stage than muscle invasive. And this was in the BCG unresponsive disease with carcinoma in situ disease. So in these patients, in this trial, patients received a repetition of BCG in combination with a drug called N-803, which was also given intravesically. And this is an IL-15 super agonist. So the bottom line is that in this study, this was, again, not a large study. The evaluable patients numbered at 71 at this time. The complete response rate was impressive, 72%, which exceeded the, and it exceeded the lower boundary of the 95% confidence interval of 20%. So really clearly over the 20% for the lower limit of the boundary. Also, at the 1 year time point, 56% of patients maintained a complete remission, which is also impressive. Again, to remind you, the backdrop is that in this space of BCG unresponsive disease with CIS, pembrolizumab intravenously is FDA approved. So this agent N-803 is looking promising in combination with BCG. Again, to recall, there is another drug which also is looking interesting, which is the Pseudomonas exotoxin conjugated with the EpCAM antibody that also looks interesting and also given intravesically. So we await the regulatory guidance on this agent as well as others in this setting. Also to recall, drug called Adstiladrin, which delivers the recombinant interferon alpha-2b gene delivered by an adenoviral vector, that has also shown promising activity in this space. So all of these agents are looking promising in this BCG unresponsive non-muscle invasive bladder cancer CIS space.
What other studies really stood out to you in terms of being something particularly important for the urothelial cancer space?
The last study I wanted to highlight is very briefly the combination of cabozantinib with nivolumab with or without ipilimumab. This was multiple cohorts of patients in the study, including kidney cancer and urothelial cancer and other rare variants. And I just wanted to highlight the 33 patients with metastatic urothelial carcinoma in this study. And these were post-platinum patients who received this VEGF plus PD-1 inhibitor approach. And in this urothelial carcinoma cohort, the objective response rate was 42%, which is impressive, with the complete remission rate of 21%. So again, a promising strategy for a VEGF plus PD-1 combination in this study. And just to remind you that there are other VEGF plus PD-1 combinations that look promising in this space in metastatic urothelial carcinoma. And these combinations have mostly been looked at in the post-platinum space. One is the sitravatinib plus nivolumab combination. And now also you have the cabozantinib plus atezolizumab that has been looked at before. And also lenvatinib plus pembrolizumab. So lenvatinib plus pembrolizumab, in fact, is being examined as we speak in the first-line trial in cisplatin-ineligible patients that have PD-L1 high tumors or in platinum-ineligible tumors, where that combination, the Len-Pembro combination, is being compared with pembrolizumab alone. So we await the data from all of these exciting studies and their full publications for some of these. But I think that this GU ASCO symposium was a very exciting meeting with a lot of advances for our patients.
What is your anticipation for the future of urothelial carcinoma with regard to clinical trials and therapeutic development?
I think looking at the future, we are waiting eagerly for the data, the more mature data from, of course, CheckMate 274 and also want to look for a hint of survival in that trial. In all fairness, it met its co-primary endpoint, so I remain quite optimistic that this is practice changing at a minimum for the PD-L1 high population. But I am quite bullish about even the all-comer population in this study. And of course, the exciting frontline studies, enfortumab, vedotin, plus pembrolizumab, and also the CheckMate 901 BMS study that's comparing ipilimumab, nivolumab versus gemcitabine platinum with co-primary endpoints in the cisplatin ineligible group, as well as in the PD-L1 high group. And remember, in that study, there is also a sub-study comparing gemcis versus gemcis nivo. So that's only cisplatin eligible patients. But again, to recall the IMvigor130 study and the KEYNOTE-361 study, which did the platinum chemo plus minus checkpoint inhibitor combinations, which unfortunately the KEYNOTE-361 was negative and the IMvigor130 has only a modest PFS, but we don't know about survival. But in both of those studies, there was a signal for better benefit for cisplatin backbone. So I think that this sub-study in the BMS CheckMate 901 study could be interesting. So look out for CheckMate 901 and, of course, the EV-302 study that's looking at the EV-Pembro combination in the first-line setting.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science Summits and Institutional Perspectives in Cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive on Air.